This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's trending?
What's trending is presented by Baker University, where graduates earn higher salaries and land jobs faster than any other university in Kansas. Apply today at bakeru.edu. You heard it last hour. Mike Moustakas and JJ Bacolo talking about it. Mike Moustakas will retire a Royal. He'll sign a one-day contract. We'll have a ceremony at a Kauffman Stadium on May 31st. We'll talk more about it with Vern as well, coming up at 12:45 when we head back out to Arizona. But obviously really cool, second overall pick in the Royals organization, made his debut in 2011, and we all know the rest is kind of history.
Disappointing results in the beginning,
type of career at first.
Yeah, at one point held the single season record for most home runs, doesn't now. Soler and Salvador Perez went ahead and put an end to that. But yeah, I mean, a truly remarkable major league career, 13 big league seasons overall. You know what it's like to be a 10-year big leaguer. That's certainly important. He'll be a Royals Hall of Famer one day. He was a part of their World Series running, won a World Series here. Also, he's a complete red ass. Mm-hmm. He was the red ass of this group, right? Like the Cain Holio moment and all this other stuff, those exist. He's the fighter of the group, right? And I kind of like that everybody has that different energy. JJ was talking about that. You kind of need that sometimes. You need the one guy who's going to stir things up. Really fun. We'll talk more about it later in the show. Next up on What's Trending, MU lost to Vandy in overtime. Did not foul up three. Ended up losing in overtime by four. Kansas dropped to Texas Tech that same day. And K-State beat Colorado on Sunday. Got back after a four-game losing streak. They got a tough one against, well, not that tough. They got to go to Cincinnati on Wednesday. And I know Kansas is the one who's got a tough one. They got to go to Houston tonight.
Yeah, they're 9.5-point underdogs.
Not great.
Yeah, 9.5-point dogs.
You get Kansas to cover here?
No, I will not be betting on the game.
No. Will you be watching?
Tonight, maybe. So Dusty texted me on Saturday, was asking about taking Kansas to cover against Texas Tech. I was like, no, stay away.
Am I the only one who thinks, like, if Kansas were to get a win tonight, it'd be the first time in like 6 weeks where I'm like, you know what? At least you are capable of beating a really good team. I wasn't sure anymore. Yeah.
If they beat them on the road,
100%. Way too long. I know it's a long shot.
I mean, I would have said the same thing about Saturday against Texas Tech, who's a top 10 team in the country. And they were able defensively to get stops. Tech went cold, and then Kansas' offense is so bad that they're not able to take advantage of. We're going to talk more about them bigger picture because of some disgusting comments that were sent to Zeke Mayo and just kind of the aftermath of that. Bill Self put out a statement, and he said he actually regrets putting out the statement. We'll tell you why, and I think it makes a lot of sense. So that's coming up in 30 minutes. Elsewhere on What's Trending, the Eagles are releasing six-time Pro Bowl corner Darius Slay, according to multiple national reports now. If he is designated as a post-June 1 cut, which sounds like he will be, the Eagles would save about $4.3 million against the cap. Also, the Bengals announced they're releasing veteran guard Alex Kappa. Drew right away
started
said,
good. He started 62 games for your team. That's just cold, man.
He had some injury issues last year. He was part of the problem with the offensive line. So he was a great signing when they signed him in 3 years ago, but now he's a little bit older.
Okay, so you're not trashing his entire career.
Oh, no, of course.
You're trashing this particular moment.
I went to a couple of Pro Bowls.
I was about to say, he's been a pretty good player
prior to his time.
Started 60 games. Lastly on What's Trending, don't forget this Friday, Alex and I and Drew will all be at Kelly's in Westport at 6:30 p.m. We're telling you, because this is a non-sanctioned station event. I'm just waiting for our boss to ask about it. We got a bonus because we were the number one rated midday show in the market. We decided we would take that cash and just essentially give it right back to you because we wouldn't get it without you. So we got a $1,000 tab. Friday night at Kelly's. Sazerac kicked in 250 to get us to the 1,000, which we appreciate. They're actually going to come and make us some cocktails on Friday, which is cool. But 6:30, Kelly's, patio area. You should be able to see the sign. We'll be there. My brother, and that's what's trending here on Pretty Well. My brother, so I was like, hey, man, come on down, right? Like, he's a...
I texted some people about it.
His wife is related to the... Well, his wife is related to the Kelly's family, so, like, he's pretty close to the family, and, like, I told you, like, we go there on Christmas and stuff. He was like, how are you going to make sure you keep the riffraff out? Like, people are just trying to score a free drink of you. I'm like, I'm not. What do you want me to do? Like, have a bouncer with a velvet rope and a list?
No, they have to get a wristband or a ticket or something. We'll work on that this week.
That's what? I was going to say, don't expect me to be the bouncer because, I mean, do you, I mean, I'm not. Who am I going to stop?
Be the bouncer?
Who am I going to stop?
I guess I'm not that worried about it. What, are you gonna police this whole thing? Seems impossible.
We'll figure out something. There'll have to be something in place. They're not wrong. Because eventually somebody's about to order a drink and they're like, hey, yeah, just put it on. I'm with Cody and Goldie. It doesn't ultimately matter, but I think we'll have to figure out something. We're about. Hope to see you guys Friday night out at Kelly's. It's going to be a good time. And I think the weather's going to be nice as well, at least nicer than it is expected to be like Tuesday or Wednesday.
They have to answer one question about the show. At the bar when you order, you have to answer one question about the show. You have to just say one. We'll give you like a list of like 20 possible things, right? Mm-hmm. You either just go up and you say gum bucket or fantastic. You mentioned Chipotle. It doesn't matter. You mentioned something about somebody and you can roll in.
Coming up in about 8 minutes, we'll get into something that I think folks in Kansas City should really care about. And that is, of course, the World Cup. But could Kansas City be in danger of actually losing any of these World Cup games? There's a report over the weekend from Fox 4 I want to get to because there's reportedly some concerns about lack of progress on FIFA's end. Their concern about maybe the Chiefs and stadium renovations for the World Cup. So we'll get to that in just a bit. But we were mentioning Royals during What's Trending. And Carlos Estevez, one of the big offseason signings for the Royals, kind of a surprise signing. And he's going to, I think, get the first crack, of course, at being the guy, even though we know they're willing to move around high leverage situations. You are worried that maybe they'll try to repeat something from a year ago.
Yeah, and it's not even a knock. I'm really excited about Estevez. And you and I have both said we think the bullpen is far improved. I think it goes so deep. This isn't even like a I'm worried about the bullpen conversation. It's that don't be beholden to the ninth. I think of the last couple of years, and it might be because of depth, admittedly, but the last couple of years, they have tried so bad for 4 to 6 weeks at the beginning of the season to establish a closer. Come on, it's Will Smith's job, and we're doing this thing. And they get stuck in this line of thinking, which is, if Estevez, because bullpen guys can, is off to one of those bad starts to a season that happen in bullpen arms, whatever, well, then use Urseg for a while in that spot. You can come back around. No, we're in a free flow here. There's no reason to pin ourselves down into one guy in the ninth inning or one guy here, or one guy there. Just use them all in leverage. They got three or four, which is more than they've had in a really long time.
And that's the difference, Cody.
Leverage guys that I trust, bounce them around a little bit. That's all.
That's why I'm not as concerned about that. One, you know, Estevez is going to get the first crack at it, and he should. We also just know how this kind of works financially. Based on what they're paying him, he's also going to have the first crack initially. But if it doesn't go well for some reason, last year, man, they didn't have many other options. It's why everybody was so frustrated for the first half of the season about opportunities they were giving to certain guys, or MacArthur was frustrating for a lot of people, etc. They have to be willing to shift, yes, but I actually think Q's hands were kind of tied last year.
You're just saying he didn't have a choice. Yeah, he just kept trying to force it because who else was it going
to
be?
Where else was he supposed to go? Whereas this year, I think there will be reasons to be more critical of how they manage the back end of the bullpen because it seems like they will have options. Mm-hmm. So it's a good problem to have kind of thing, but this year there might actually be conversations on a random Tuesday night game like, oh, why did he go to blank closer or bullpen guy, whereas last year it's kind of like, dude, he only has like two guys he trusts right now in the bullpen. What do you expect him to do?
And for a while, one of those was James MacArthur, who they later did not trust, although he ended up getting hurt and was hurt for a portion of that, so that played in there. Because part of it depends on Hunter Harvey, who I think we're going to maybe try to get on the show at some point here during spring training. When you start looking at if he, like, because it's hard to point out, but like, he was pitching leverage for his team. Like, Hunter Harvey was pitching high leverage for the Nationals before they traded for him. He just got hurt. You and I both think they overused him in that situation, and then they didn't have a choice. But of the leverage guys they have potentially in the roster, they are Urseg, Estevez, Harvey, and who am I forgetting?
Zerpa, maybe? I mean, he was pitching high leverage in the
postseason. Based on how they used him in that Yankees series against Juan Soto, yeah, I think that'd be the next guy they trust the most, you would think, heading into the season.
Like, if you're going through those four names before we even get to, like, let's say Bolin makes a roster, I don't think he will, but, like, let's just say, or Carlos Hernandez. Okay, well, Carlos Hernandez was pitching the eighth inning for a portion of the season last year. Like, they've gone way further down the list as potential guys who are getting the job done. And I, you know, I just think their pitching staff's going to end up hitting the injury thing in the right way. This sounds weird, but the injury thing's actually going to hit them in the right way, where I don't think Kyle Wright's going to be available for a few weeks.
Yeah, not to start the year.
Which they don't need him to be clear. They actually don't need Kyle Wright to be available right away, unless there's some other injury that's going to happen between now and opening day. They're in a relatively good spot to kind of maneuver around that. I love the makeup of it. It's not that. It's just, and maybe this is just like ever since HDH. It's probably more than a one-year thing for me. It's probably like the last 7 years in a row, I consistently watch this team try to just make one guy be Wade Davis again. And they just go back to the well, and it takes him 2 months to decide he's not the guy. And to your point, they may never do that in this circumstance because of how deep the pool of people available are. But I guess that's the point. Even less reason to hang on like you did in the previous years. You got a guy having an awful 2-week stretch and it's 3-2 in the ninth and your team's 500. Put in the guy who's getting the outs. Stop messing around because we told that guy he'd be the closer and we played Estevez a bunch of money. I'm not saying he shouldn't close. He can get the first chance. It's cool, man.
He's going to, too.
Well, yeah, yeah.
And he's definitely going to. Yeah,
that's not the argument I'm making. Just, you understand what I'm
saying.
Last
year, yeah, I mean, 2.45 ERA with two teams.
He was dominant.
Acquired midseason. He was on the Angels and, of course, the Philadelphia Phillies. And yeah, he had 50 strikeouts. I mean, I'm excited to see him pitch. And we'll check in with Vernon and ask him about this very thing, how he sees it kind of playing out. I believe he might finally get in a game here pretty soon. I know he's been doing a lot of like side session stuff because of just a minor injury that he was dealing with early on. Remember, we're still actually really early in spring training. That's what's nuts. They've only still played, what is it? Like, is it 8 spring training games?
Like
if that. We're not, like, they haven't even played 15 spring training games or something. So it's still very, very early on. We'll talk to Verm at 12:45 right here on your home for KC Sports, 96.5 The Fan. This is Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. So over the weekend, I saw a little bit of an update from our friend Jonathan Katz over at Fox 4. We've had Jonathan on every once in a while to talk about, a lot of times it's stadium related, but he's been all over the World Cup stuff as well. Mm-hmm. And I saw this, I was like, well, this is something to keep an eye on at very least. And his story on Fox 4 said sources have confirmed to him that FIFA, of course, the governing body of soccer, has expressed concern with a lack of progress on the World Cup efforts in Kansas City. One issue is concert revenue losses the Chiefs face due to the construction needed to prepare Arrowhead Stadium for the World Cup in the summer of 2026. Katz's report goes on to say multiple sources have confirmed in the past week the Chiefs are worried about the financial impact of the cost of World Cup renovations at Arrowhead combined with the loss of summer concert revenue at the stadium as renovations happen. It goes on to say since Thursday, Fox 4 has heard from another source that believes FIFA's concerned with a lack of progress, and a third source didn't have any knowledge of conversations between the Chiefs and KC 2026 about the cost of renovations or lost concert revenue, but they did say they were concerned about disputes among the board. And if you remember, last summer, multiple people left the board. People resigned because of some issues going on there. Don't like hearing this. That's next summer. It's not that far out. And it sounds like maybe they're behind, or if there's concerns by the Chiefs losing some revenue on that, like, you guys were part of the bid for this whole thing. You knew, and they have started the renovations.
They have. There's some pictures.
They've got to take some seats out, remember? Because the field has to have certain dimensions and everything.
Yeah, so very concerning, honestly. I know that I don't want to overplay it like they're definitively going to lose them. But it wouldn't be the first time. If you go back through the history of the World Cup, they move these things around all the time. If they don't think you can handle the number of games, there's some other city who's doing a great job that they will. For the Chiefs end, I don't understand. Mark Donovan's very good at his job for a reason. How you knew doing the renovations would impact your current revenue. I mean, that's just like,
right.
That's the name of the game. I'm sorry, but like, that's just the cost of doing business in this circumstance. And by losing out on that, you're getting the World Cup games. You're putting a World Cup at Arrowhead Stadium. This goes back to the whole stadium conversation in general. I think you'd feel different about this if this was your new, brand new, shiny toy, and you knew that there were a million other things you could continue to do inside that space that weren't just this. But it does sound like a little bit like, I don't think they're behind gold. I don't think the stadium's not going to be ready. Like, no games are going to get played here. But being behind at all when it's, what, 14 months? Like, it's not that long until the World Cup's
next,
here.
Next June, right? The mayor was
tickets
quoted.
Tickets go on sale, by the way.
Probably not until we know the group, right? The group play and who's in what group, right? Whenever that draw is, I don't know when the draw happens and how early and everything like that. That's a question for our buddy Rob Britton, more on that. But the mayor, Quinn Lucas, was quoted in the same Fox 4 article. He was asked about the concerns that are referenced in this article. He said, quote, the six matches will be played in Kansas City. When he was asked if he was confident that they will still be played here, quote, we have strong relationships among all groups. I got the chance to talk to the Chiefs a week ago, and I believe that they have positive conversations, relationships going forward. Yeah, there's going to be a big construction project at Arrowhead Stadium to make sure you have the seating, the field is large enough, all of that work. You have construction people in it. You have attorneys figuring everything out. That's not different than anything we do each day. In Kansas City, we do big things, and we figure it all out, and I think everybody still gets along in connection with it. We'll get it done. The games will all be here in Kansas City. Something to keep an eye on.
They lost one. It would be a massive failure, right? Like, the World Cup would still be here, but it would be...
Yes.
And this is in the middle
June
of,
June 16th is when the first match is scheduled next year. June 16th of 2026.
So almost exactly 14 months. 14 months and 2 weeks. 14 and a half months. I mean, it's really... it's really not far at all. I think that this would be worse than... Well, not worse. That's too far. It would be on par with losing one of the teams. Let's just say you lose one. The Chiefs go to Kansas and you keep the Royals. This would be on par with that. Having a set number of World Cup games coming to your city, coming to your stadium, and getting one stripped away because you couldn't get your stuff done on time, that'd be pretty ugly, man. I mean, it'd be hard to view that as anything short of like a failure on that end. I wonder when, very excited when they announced it, obviously, that FIFA was coming here. Obviously, it's incredible that Kansas City won a bid. You and I both love this city and think that it's grown a ton in the last decade. That's why Kansas City's able to get an event like this, etc. But it's like, I'm trying to decide when like the hype's going to rebuild back for me. I'm thinking like maybe
when
the pools get announced.
When we know what teams are
I enter the lottery to get seats.
Yeah, like we know what nations are going to use Kansas City also as a training hub. Because some will use Kansas City as a training hub. Doesn't mean they're playing in Kansas City necessarily. Like, there's rumors for a while that like Germany is already taken. Could be utilizing some of the facilities here. Doesn't mean Germany's in our group or the group play.
That would be nice, too.
But that would be awesome. Yeah. That's the craziest thing, too. You're right about the excitement. Depending on the country, too. I mean, if you got a Germany or Brazil or something, the amount of people either way coming into Kansas City is going to be unbelievable. But especially if it's a country that is so passionate about soccer the way a couple of those I just mentioned are, it would be insane. I have no idea. Truly, nobody knows exactly how it will be in Kansas City, those that month next summer where we're going to have all these different nations playing. We know the U.S. is not going to be in the group in Kansas City. Oh, spoiler.
They're going to be in New York.
Yeah.
Or L.A.
But could Germany or, England or, pick another country that's viewed as one of the premier soccer powers.
If the U.S. isn't going to be in the group, you have the group of death here where there's three countries that are like top 20. Top 20 in the world countries that are all somehow in the same
group. I think it's going to be cool no matter what. I mean, I honestly
think Germany and Brazil.
Brazil and England. Please.
I'd be excited to go watch it if it's Trinidad and Tobago. Like, I want to see a World Cup match.
It's truly a once in a lifetime.
The teams do not matter to me to go. If I got a ticket and it's like inside of a budget in which I can afford, and I have no idea what a World Cup ticket goes for, but if it's like inside of a budget I can afford, I want to get there.
No, yeah. I'm with you. I'm just saying it'd be cooler in terms of what it means for the city if we have one of the bigger nations involved. But yes, it's a bucket list type of event. So one way or the other, they could be playing whoever's viewed as the worst country to get in. I don't know. Like, who's that? See. Is that Ghana? I have no idea. Like, somebody
I'm
like
not
that.
The person to ask.
You're the soccer guy too. You and Rob. I rely on you.
One of the CONCACAF teams, probably. Okay. Is,
like Costa Rica or something?
Yeah, somebody like that maybe.
So we'll see. Hopefully this report sparks some people to get off their ass a little bit more maybe and get some stuff done when it comes to the World Cup.
The U.S., Canada, and Mexico are all in, correct? Because they're all host. I mean, it's a combined host.
Yes, that is my understanding.
Plural. Okay.
That is my understanding as well.
I was just looking at previous countries.
Could be Australia is a little bit lower in the tier if they make it.
It really varies. Like the price.
Well, the field is expanded too. Oh, you're talking about ticket prices.
Yeah, I was talking ticket prices. I was just like kind of curious where they land in.
The games are only at Arrowhead, correct?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you gotta have.
I've
48 teams this year in the field or next
year.
That's
right. There are more than.
That should drive prices down. More matches.
I do think it depends on the countries. Where if you get the group of death, your prices are going to be
Yeah, if, hefty. If it's Brazil versus Germany, and yeah. you know, like,
well, one of the quarterfinals potentially is slated to be here. So I guess the quarterfinal, you could get a match
that would be awesome
like that. The other reminder: the other U.S. cities: Atlanta, Boston, Dallas, Houston, L.A., Miami, New York, Philly, Seattle, and San Francisco. So if you're just wondering about ticket prices and things like that, like. You know.
When you hear those cities, doesn't Kansas City stand out? Like, it for makes sure. you feel it was a big day. Special. It was that's a huge,
it's a great soccer city, man.
Cities,
it was,
man.
It was a huge deal. When I mean, remember, they out Denver and St. Louis had bids, and Kansas City beat them out. It was a huge deal, specifically that they beat out Denver, because that was viewed as one of the real strong contenders. And you don't want to screw this thing up. That's the other why. Like, I don't like seeing this report where it's like maybe there's something sketchy going on and things slowing up. Like, no, we need it. This is your one shot, and how people might view this city, especially internationally, forever, right? And how people perceive our city. So you don't want to screw this thing up. Well, and ultimately, I hope they get it all figured out.
This is one of the things from somebody who did not grow up here, just recently moved here, obviously. When you watch the U.S. play, I remember like in 2010 or whatever it was where we almost beat Belgium, they would like we would score a goal and they would show they would show power and light
sure.
as
oh,
one
yeah.
of the places like soccer is
that was
a,
before you even lived here
correct
yeah, we yes, know that. We're very proud of that.
Well, like Kansas City is a soccer hub in a way that it makes sense that they would feel attracted to Kansas City more than maybe Denver is. You get that transition to power and light where everybody's packed in and it's awesome, and of all the cities in the country, it's Kansas City that is the most electric essentially for the soccer.
It's hard
landscape.
To make the argument because we're getting World Cup games over a lot of other mid-sized cities like Kansas City. First purpose-built women's stadium in the world was built here, right, for the KC Current. And Sporting used to get so much support. They still get plenty of support. They just
not very
stink.
Good right now, man. Not Ooh, very good. Tough. They lost
Are they going to be this bad all year?
They look bad against
San Jose.
They
made all these moves, and they look lost.
Yeah.
Not looking good.
Not good start. Not a good start. Long season, but not a good start for old Sporting KC.
Have you been down to Power and Light during one of the World Cup?
During World Cup? No. No, no, no.
It's a scene, man. I mean,
well, that's a big reason why in the city. So Barney Alice Plaza, we all know they're doing the massive construction project, and it's supposed to be done by summer of 2026, next summer, right before the World Cup. That was part of the pitch, my understanding, was they're going to use Barney Alice Plaza, the renovated kind of green space they're going to turn into more of. That's going to be a hub for something. I don't remember if it's like the fan zone or what, but it'll be utilized for something for 2026, man. That'll be here before we know it. It's not like, I know it's not 14 months seems like a long time, but we know how this kind of stuff goes. It flies, next
yeah.
thing you know.
Yeah, but before you know it, all of a sudden they'll just be World Cup games. That'll add to a whole nother summer. Maybe the Royals will be defending World Series champs. The Chiefs will be defending Super Bowl champs. We'll have the World Cup here, right?
That's right. All that's going to happen. I like your thinking. Thinking of cool events, though, don't forget we are in the month of March. Basketball Madness is coming to Kansas City for the NAIA Men's College Basketball Championship. March 20th through 25th at Municipal Auditorium. 16 teams, 15 games, one national champion. Bring the family for nonstop action and affordable tickets. Get yours today at NAIAHoops.com. Yeah, we're about to have a busy month, man. Got that. Mentioned tournaments starting this week for some other events going on. So sports over the next calendar year obviously is going to be huge here in Kansas City, especially the next month.
Yeah, particularly full between, I mean, just again, another thing that we get to host in the city, which is cool, and kind of goes back to the same stuff. But yeah, are you when do you get hyped? Because you're not the same college basketball fan you used to be.
No.
And I know we're going to talk some of the stuff that happened in Kansas and Missouri here later on in the show again, but you're not as big of a college basketball fan as you used to be. When do you start getting real hyped for the tournament? Is it Selection Sunday and not a day before?
Selection Sunday.
Conference tournament time get you?
I enjoy conference tournaments, but again, not the way I used to. Selection Sunday. I love it. Like that day waiting for the freaking Big Ten to end their championship so we can get to Selection Sunday. That day is awesome.
Some of the heat taking off for you because you know Kansas going to be like a 9?
But conference tournament, I would like the conference tournament doesn't factor into my excitement level as much as it used to. The Selection Sunday, I just like the entire. Well, actually, there's even more intrigue, Cody. Now, if they're going to be a worse seed, find out who the hell are they playing. They'll be playing a Power 5 school probably in the first round, the way things are trending. That might be, you know what I mean? They might be in
that
7-10 game.
I kind of agree with you. That's a better match than some like small school team who can shoot.
Yeah. So, no, Selection Sunday, I can't wait. And maybe we'll do something as a show, as a. I don't know if it's a bracket contest or something. I know we've done some stuff in the past, so maybe we'll work on something again. I guess we got to get on that, don't we?
I would say so, since it's like a couple weeks away.
Maybe we should do that.
2 weeks away, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
An unofficial contest, of course, I'm talking about. Unofficial.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Always unofficial. We do unofficial things.
A lot of unofficial stuff on this show. It's how we get things done sometimes, you know?
Just a great sports city. That's all that matters. Like someone was happily celebrating Baker University having a great season in basketball this year. They've have been great. So
what level is Baker?
NAI.
They're NAI? Sweet.
Yeah, that's why they were saying they could potentially be
good stuff.
If all goes well, they could.
The Baker.
One of my favorite early memories in sport. I called an overtime buzzer beater to win the NAIA national championship. I was on the play-by-play.
Sweet.
An overtime buzzer beater to win a national championship.
How about that?
How amped up were you? I want to hear the call.
Pretty amped up. I can play the call probably at some point. My color guy was Jarrett Sutton.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Really?
It was
the Baker Wildcats. Is that
I've done maybe because like I did play by play in college, but I was never trying to make a career out of it. So I've maybe only done.
Yes, true. Baker Wildcats.
50 total games of play by play in my entire life between all sports, basketball, softball, whatever. And that just happens to be one of them.
There you go.
How many games do you have in the chamber of play by play gold?
More than that, only because when I was in college, I was coming back on Fridays to do high school games in the area for an online outlet at the time. I guess it still exists, but at the time. And then my first job in Wichita, I'm trying to remember who the school. Oh, I also had to go up. I had to drive to north of Topeka, Holton, Kansas or whatever as well.
And do you play by play for that?
Random game because our full-time guy was sick or something. So I've done a little bit more. I haven't done play by play in years, though. But I enjoy doing it. It was never like what
I wanted. That might have been the last game of play I ever called.
But
I might have retired on top. I don't know that I've done one since.
That's right. All right. Coming up next, though, let's talk about a big trade that went down over the weekend in the NFL. Why it makes way more sense for that team than it ever did for the Chiefs. Plus, we'll talk some more baseball. Josh Vernier, our Royals insider, joins us from Arizona.
Kudos to the text line, who did not find my call, but immediately found the game I was talking about.
From the NAIA?
The NAIA? Yeah. Graceland versus LSUA.
Okay.
It was a buzzer beater to send it to overtime. Like the guy hit a shot at the buzzer from the corner three to send it to overtime.
At Muni.
And then a buzzer beater to win it at Muni. You know? What a time. It was on a SportsCenter top 10, apparently. Buzzer beater to win a national championship.
How can they use the TV call, Cody, not your radio call?
Well, I'm sure it's like on ESPN 3 or something.
Yeah, probably.
And because I don't know why you'd use a radio call on TV.
Well, they sometimes will flash if it's a really strong call.
Your radio calls might be really good sometimes, you know, better than
honestly,
the TV call.
I don't remember if it was good. It's been, I don't want to say for sure. Again, very limited play-by-play guy. I got excited.
Well, sure. I would hope you had some excitement for that shot. Yeah, that's for starters. Got to have that. Hey, coming up in 7 minutes, we're heading out to Arizona. We'll check in with our Royals insider, Josh Vernier. We'll talk more about the news of the day out there, at least. That is that Mike Moustakas is going to sign a one-day contract, retire as a member of the Royals. May 31st is going to be a ceremony. And you heard from J.J. Piccolo and Mike Moustakas exclusively in the 11 o'clock hour here on 96.5 The Fan. But I want to get back to the NFL for a little bit because over the weekend, a big trade went down. The 49ers trading wide receiver Deebo Samuel to the Washington Commanders for a fifth-round pick. And so you see that, you're like, well, that's it? That's all it took? Why didn't blank team? Why didn't my team do it?
Yeah.
Then you step back. One, you look at the financial element. It's a 1 year remaining on the deal. Over a $15 million cap hit. This is a perfect trade for the Commanders. To me, it would not have been a good trade for a team like Kansas City. The Commanders have a quarterback on a rookie deal. We all know this, Jaden Daniels. You're able to make more aggressive free agent signings like this. You have more cap space. You have some more wiggle room. And their GM also knows Deebo Samuel, meaning, hey, whatever questions about his work ethic right now, he's 20 pounds overweight reportedly, all this kind of stuff. That guy knows him extremely well. I think it'll be a nice move for the Commanders. It's worth the risk there. In Kansas City's case, 29 years old, injury history. We were talking about injuries earlier. He plays in a lot of games, but he doesn't finish a lot of games. Great move for them. I would not have wanted it in Kansas City, and it's why reportedly they were, I think even Fesco reported last week he was hearing they weren't really in on Deebo Samuel.
Would you, I mean, I guess just based on the way that this looks, if they didn't have really good young wide receivers, I might feel different. That's the truth. If they didn't have two really good young wide receivers that I liked, I'd probably maybe feel a little bit different. Like, you know what? I mean, yeah, sure, you can bring Hollywood back, but don't you want, like, real wide receivers? And look, again, this is not to knock, but, like, Deebo's been better than Hollywood, right? Even at their peak, better. They both hurt. But when on the field, Deebo's have been a better player than Hollywood Brown. But Hollywood Brown's going to cost you $7 million and zero draft picks. Like, the only appeal of the Deebo thing is that if it goes well, you might be able to try to talk him into a, you know, an extension part of the way through the year or work out different things in order to get there. It makes no sense right now for the Chiefs in the free agency market to take on a $20 million cap hit at no position. That includes tackle or corner or anyone. Not for this year. That's not where their cap is. They need somebody who's like $7 million this year, especially until Trey Smith gets through the tag process and ideally gets a long-term contract so they're not eating that full money.
The Commanders can take swing.
Yeah, any team with a young... I'd have been fine with pretty much any team with a rookie quarterback on a rookie deal doing that move.
Yeah, the Patriots should have been interested. Maybe they were.
They have way too much cap.
Think about the three names at wide receiver we've talked about that could be trade or cut candidates. One is Debo. That's been resolved now. Cooper Kupp and then DK Metcalf. Cooper Kupp, even more expensive. I think Cooper Kupp might end up just getting cut because it's $29 million cap hit. He's older. He has an injury history as well. But if I'm the Patriots, I'm interested. If all of a sudden Cooper Kupp was open on the free market, then maybe I'm interested if I'm Kansas City, although I think that ship maybe has sailed after the in-season conversations. DK Metcalf, the Chiefs still reportedly are interested. That one is a problem for me because it, in my opinion, requires a contract extension right out of the gate to make that work because it's a $29 million cap hit for DK Metcalf, who's under 30, who obviously is a different type of receiver than what they have. But I'm not going to average salary $30-plus million dollars a year for DK Metcalf.
These, like, what? I mean, maybe I'm way off here. I'm not seeing a ton of fans on Debo. Like, there are some that are always like, anytime you see a low draft pick compensation, let's say DK Metcalf gets traded for a six tomorrow. Anytime you see like some guy get traded for some like essentially meaningless in most fans' minds draft pick, it's like, why didn't the Chiefs consider this? Why didn't they make this move? And I would just like, is there something about their wide receivers we don't like right now?
Well, just look at the financial.
But it's not even the financial. Like current positioning. I don't know what they're going to do in the draft, and I don't know what small moves they're going to make in free agency. As it sits right now, I love their wide receiver position. I love that they have Xavier Worthy and Rashee Rice together, my concern over the suspension notwithstanding. I love the Rashee Rice-Worthy combo. I love that they have Kelsey to go with that. One more drafted wide receiver, and as I told you, almost any veteran wide receiver, and it can't be much better, I don't think, without committing massive resources to it. And I don't think they need to, based on where they currently sit. And so, like, yeah, I mean, look, it's a fifth. If the Chiefs had done this move and they could fit it under the cap, am I going to like lose my mind? No, but it also would mean if they're going to do that, they're about to write a $30 million check to to Patrick Mahomes to renegotiate his entire deal. Do you want to do that for Debo for 1 year?
Yeah, the Niners, I think, are just kind of in a rebuild mode after last year's disaster. They know they're going to have to pay Brock Purdy $60 million unless they pull off the crazy trade that I suggested for the offseason. Otherwise, they're probably going to also be the Brandon Ayuk one. They just got a deal done with him last year. That's the only reason why I don't know if I believe that they're actually going to trade Brandon Ayuk. But Chris McCaffrey, I think pretty clearly, it's not going to ever be the same running back. It sucks to say, but I think it finally caught up to him last season. So they're just in a different spot. Kyle Shanahan, they might have to hit the slight reset button there in San Francisco.
I think so. They seem like they want to hit the reset button, sadly enough. Maybe it was like a week ago, we were talking about this a little bit. A week ago, I think ESPN, I think it was Bill Barnwell, put out his list of most intriguing teams in the offseason. And Drew's Cincinnati Bengals were on there, right? Because people are like, are they going to give Ja'Marr Chase a bunch of money, T. Higgins a bunch of money, Trey Hendrickson a bunch of money? They're coming off a year in which they missed the playoffs, et cetera. So they are, I agree, one of the most intriguing teams. I would argue so are the San Francisco 49ers. Are you paying Brock Purdy? You just traded Debo Samuel. There's rumors you're listening to calls. Not rumors. Rumors is not right. John Lynch straight up said they were listening to calls on trades for Brandon Ayuk. So does that mean they believe in Pearsall? Do they love Juwan Jennings? Is Christian McCaffrey alive and well? And does he have a knee in which he can run off of or an ankle in which he can run off of? They might be one of the three most interesting teams in the offseason for me because I just don't have any idea which direction they're heading. Are they planning on tearing it all down and just walking on Purdy, like you said, trading them to the New York Jets before the draft?
They should trade him and then sign Sam Darnold at 70% of the cost.
It's just crazy.
I don't think that's going to happen, but I actually
that's what you would do if you were John Lynch?
If I were them, I would find a trade partner for Brock Purdy. I wouldn't pay him $60 million a year. And I would go pay, if Sam Darnold was available, he was with the Niners a year ago, I would just trade for Sam Darnold, not going to have to give up much capital, and then I would give him a deal, and I'd only be paying him probably, what, $40 million a year? Some of you might be like, well, why would I do that? It's Brock Purdy's better. Brock Purdy's not bad. I just the price at quarterback, $60 million a year. I don't think that's the guy I'm spending that kind of money for. I don't know.
$60
million. I also think Kyle Shanahan can elevate a lot of quarterbacks anyway.
Is Patrick Mahomes the single highest quarterback cap hit this year right now in the NFL?
Other than Deshaun Watson,
no,
probably.
I think Dak has a higher cap hit. I think Dak is first.
Deshaun Watson? Oh, my God.
I think it's Dak and Deshaun.
Those guys are both higher?
Deshaun Watson's cap hit, $72.9 million this upcoming season. We know he's not playing.
I think Dak's is more. Dak Prescott's cap hit is more than that.
What?
I think they flashed it on. They showed it on ESPN one day. Well,
Dak Prescott's is $89 million.
Yeah.
At least Dak, though, they're not giving. Wait. At least Deshaun Watson's obviously way worse because he's not playing.
But sure, but. Do they have any way to maneuver that?
Well, you just signed a new deal, so if they wanted to. 89 this year.
$89 million
last year was $44 million. This year, $89 million. The next year, $67 million. The next year, $61 million. And they can get out after 2027.
This is always the most hilarious list. Here is the list of guys with the top 10 cap hits in football. Dak, Deshaun Watson, then Mahomes. Okay, that makes sense. Derek Carr coming up next on the list. Stafford makes sense. Burrow makes sense. Allen makes sense. Geno Smith. You're like, what sport is this sometimes? It's just like, you know, this works, Golden. You know, you and I both agree, which is just like cost of doing business stuff sometimes. But whew. This is why the rookie quarterback, when we mentioned the Debo thing, Michael Penix Jr., right? Another team that can just target whatever weapon they want. Jaden Daniels' cap hit is $8.5 million. Bo Nix's is 4.2. Yeah. Michael Penix is 5.2. Dak Prescott's is $89 million currently, and I don't think it'll stay there. Mahomes is 66. So, yeah, take on all the $20 million contracts you want.
Yeah, that's the luxury you have with rookie quarterbacks, except in Denver for at least this past year, they were still paying Russell Wilson or had him on the cap. So that they didn't get the same advantage as some of these other teams. But, of course, that's the name of the game. Can you put together an unbelievable roster while you have a quarterback not making any money? It's why, like, Jalen Hurts, his cap hit hasn't really kicked in yet, even on his new deal yet. It's a big reason why they've been able to maneuver around the roster that they have. And then eventually, you know, if you're Buffalo, you know, Josh Allen, as great as he is, they didn't win when he wasn't making much money. The Chiefs had multiple rings in their back pocket before, or at least a ring in their back pocket before Mahomes started making legit money. It's like, if you can build a winner when you don't have the large contract, that's one thing. But can you build a championship caliber roster once you have your quarterback making that kind of money? There's very few GMs that have done it. Howie Roseman's done it, and obviously Brett Veach has done it. Other than that, there's no other GM in the league right now that has shown that they can have a Super Bowl caliber roster with a veteran making that kind of money. Maybe Matthew Stafford and the Rams, I guess. That would be it. We'll get back to the NFL in the 1 o'clock hour, but let's head out to Arizona. Our spring training coverage on 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by Park & Go, KC's premier airport parking destination. Our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, joins us here on the show. And Vern, we obviously heard you talking to Mike Moustakas earlier today. He gets to have the honor that I think is well-deserved at this point in time, which is have a celebration, a ceremony, and his number, or maybe not his number retired, but at least he will be retiring as a Royal, I should say.
Yeah, Drew Waters currently rocking the number 8 out here in Arizona. But the thing is, and I'm sure you guys have discussed this in the past, it's, you know, who from that 2015 doesn't get a day? Who doesn't make it to the Royals Hall of Fame when it's all said and done? Great. You know, it was great to see Moose, great to see the family out here as well. And interesting, once again, I know I've mentioned it to you guys, you know, that there is starting to, For as much as, you know, when we were young, you know, the Royals were a laughing stock, and unless you're trotting George and Willie and the guys from 85 out, there was nothing really to hang your hat on. Now, you know, there is a Royal way, a tradition, a legacy of great Royals baseball from years past. I mean, just being in the clubhouse over the past few weeks and talking with, you know, former first-round pick and a Gavin Cross, current first-round pick Jack Caglione, and the way that Mike Sweeney, a Royals Hall of Famer, is connected with them. And, you know, in Gavin Cross's case, really had a, you know, come-to-Jesus type of meeting with Mike Sweeney in the fact of, hey, man, these careers are really short. If you don't start honing in on what's going to keep you on the field, what's going to make you a better player, talking about diet, talking about commitment, talking about off-season work ethic, the way that these greats, these Hall of Famers, can connect with the new generation, it's they're not the coaches. They're not the ones that are deciding whether or not you make the 26-man roster. And man, the man that Mike Moustakas ultimately became, the leader that he was in the latter half of his career, to me, he's going to be cut from the same cloth as a Mike Sweeney as far as instilling confidence in these young Royals, and like James Shields did so well last week, really helping the guys come together and be that family that you heard Moose reference so much, and which we all saw from afar in that 2015 season, from the passing of Moose's mom and the father of Chris Young, and everything that, and then ultimately the Yordano Ventura tragedy. You know, that is a bond that, for as great as those Chiefs teams are and were, I don't know if we've ever seen a family dynamic the way that we did in that 2015 squad.
You know, I go back and, like, if I were Mikel Garcia or MJ Melendez and or even just some of the first round guys you mentioned whose careers haven't turned into what they probably thought they would turn into, there is no player I would mention more in the organization than Moose. It was going down in a hurry. He played four full seasons, Vern, where he was not a good player. They had sent him down. He was getting benched. He was hitting eighth. He hit leadoff or second the following year after they got to the World Series. And people were questioning if that was a good decision in 15. And he turned his career around. Like, there's just no better, like, you can, like, what you are as a player today does not decide what you are as tomorrow, I guess.
No, and the player that he became, I think, is a great example of how you always need to be willing to adjust and able to take a few bites of some humble pie. I mean, Mike Moustakas ultimately became the franchise's single-season home run leader, which, Cody, if I would have told you that on draft night, I don't think you would have been surprised knowing that he was the all-time home run leader in the state of California. But those early struggles, this guy could have, like we've seen plenty of others over the years, continue to just bang his head against the wall, do the same thing. But no, we started to see him laying down bunts and making sure that defense played him honestly, played him straight up. He started spraying the ball to the opposite field. And, instead of being the guy, I'm just going to continue to swing for the fences. This is what got me here. This is what made me a top five pick. Just like we talked about, you mentioned MJ Melendez, the swing changes, like we've talked about in the past with Brady Singer on the mound, man. If you're not willing to adjust, you're going to find yourself out of the league real quick. And I think Mike Moustakas, from going that number two pick to going down to Omaha and then ultimately becoming what I think many would consider a Royals legend, is just, it's the type of conversation that Q and Paul Hoover and a lot of the coaching staff, they didn't ride that type of wave. Now, they got stories themselves, but the way that Moose can connect with those first-rounders, with those highly touted prospects, wherever they were drafted, that's a connection that not everyone can make.
We're talking to our Royals insider, Josh Fernier, here on 96.5 The Fan. He's got his hot stove show coming up Thursday at 6 o'clock. What about on the field in front of you there the last day or so? Mikel Garcia getting some work in center field.
Yeah. I'm actually out here right now. Royals playing a B game against the Texas Rangers. Michael Wacha going opposite Nate Eovaldi. Jack Caglione out there at first base. Freddie Fermin collecting a knock or two already. But yeah, as far as Mikel Garcia, I've had a chance to talk with the birthday boy earlier today, turns 25. Yeah, that was his second start in center field. And, much like Michael Massey in left, they're working their tails off, man. That's the thing that I enjoy watching the most out here is, what does your work look like? Are you taking every rep seriously? Right. I mean, we're fortunate enough to watch Alex Gordon go through his pregame workout, his power shag out in left field. And now that's an unreachable bar for a Massey and a Mikel Garcia right now. But the amount of work that these guys are putting in, the energy in which they're taking every rep seriously, it's impressive. I'll be honest. I'm very encouraged with what I've seen from Michael Massey in left, and even more so encouraged. Maybe I shouldn't have been surprised. I mean, the guy's an athlete in Mikel Garcia. He's a natural shortstop, and we're seeing it a lot around Major League Baseball, whether it's Jackson Merrill with the Padres, countless other shortstops. The great Robin Yount did it, moved out to center field. He looks like a natural out there. The only thing that's missing is what you would expect to be missing, the instincts, the confidence around the wall, right? Michael Garcia in his first start in center, there were two balls to deep right center field. And, you know, understandably, I mean, shoot, lifelong center fielders still get nervous once they hit that warning track. So that just, he just needs more reps, and he admitted that today. I just need more work out there. But, yeah, I think he's excited about the opportunity to always find himself on the field. And it's not at the hot corner. It's out there in center field. Now, there was a mix-up, yes, not a mix-up, but a lack of communication between him and the right fielder. But, you know, the right fielder's John Rave. They've probably never practiced together. So some of it you kind of just need to throw out, not worry too much about, and just chalk it up as he needs this experience and he'll be better for it. But certainly coming into camp, I didn't think I would be as encouraged with Massey in left and Garcia in center as I am 2.5-3 weeks in.
We know there's a lot of competition in the outfield, and it seems like it's musical chairs right now until they figure it out. There is no position with less competition than catcher, right? Like, I've been genuinely impressed with Freddie Fermin's 2 years in the bigs, his first 2 years, and Salvi. So, I mean, it doesn't seem like anything's going there. People excited about Freddie again?
Yeah. I mean, the work that he put in this offseason, look.
Who's going to be better, Freddie? I like that.
Yeah. Looks as strong as ever. And, you know, early in camp, the impression was, Freddie's, to no fault of his own, going to find himself back in that role as the backup catcher. You're getting, one, maybe two starts a week. But with what we're seeing out here in camp, three hits yesterday, he took Nate Eovaldi to the opposite field to start off this B game. Boy, it's going to be difficult to keep him out of the lineup. Now, obviously, you can't have him and Salvi in the lineup every single day. That's asking for trouble. But with that DH, sure, Indian, Salvi, and Bobby, and Vinny are all going to find themselves in there. But boy, man, the way that he looks out here, the energy, obviously, that he brings to the pitching staff. I mean, the guy was up for a Gold Glove in his first full season in the big leagues. I think you're going to have a difficult time keeping him out of the lineup. And you're going to have a difficult time keeping him outside behind the dish. I mean, this is a guy that, talent-wise, I think deserves the nod behind the dish. Not that he's better than Salvi. You know, Salvi's a future Hall of Famer, but defensively right now, Freddie, takes a backseat to nobody in the American League. So what it looks like to me is that Salvi's going to find himself in that DH position. Now, that's going to be difficult for Q to convince Salvi to DH multiple times a week, but if Freddie keeps swinging it the way that he has out here in Arizona, he's got to find his name in the lineup.
Earlier on the show, Cody and I were talking about the bullpen a little bit, and like Carlos Estevez, he's going to get the first opportunity, obviously, to be the closer for this team. But Cody had made the point that, hey, a year ago, they stuck with Will Smith because he was supposed to be that guy and was making more money, et cetera. And he's worried that basically they don't stick with somebody too long. I think that last year, you didn't have any options. If your hands were tied, so they had to stick with somebody a little bit longer. Right. How do you see that playing out if Carlos were to struggle early on in the season?
I think I'll tell you this. He certainly has a longer leash than Will Smith did because he also has a much better track record than Will Smith has coming into last season. Other than Will, I mean, all of a sudden, James MacArthur in his first opening day suddenly finds himself, his first full big league season, he suddenly finds himself as a closer for a team that's in a division race. So, I don't want to say they didn't do right by James MacArthur, but they put him in a very difficult spot. That's not going to happen this year because, if Estevez struggles early, I don't see him being removed from the closer's role the same way that Will Smith was. Maybe he, the next opportunity goes to a Lucas Erceg or a Hunter Harvey, but when you're getting that type of salary, when you have multiple years on your contract, I can't imagine that this team removes the closer tag from Carlos Estevez until it becomes a catastrophic issue. But that dude's too good. I don't see that happening at all.
What do you kind of, in the early vibe, Vern, handicapping the back end of the bullpen, like Stratton? Who do you like, I guess, out of there early on?
Honestly, I think there's one spot open in the bullpen right now. Estevez is your closer. Erceg's your fireman. Hunter Harvey's likely your setup guy. Man, Angel Zerpa is maybe the most impressive reliever that I've seen out here, dominating against lefties, as we saw last year in the postseason. He was the lefty stopper, and the challenge to him this offseason was, first of all, lefties, it should not be a competition, Angel, when you're up there facing a lefty. That should be automatic. But they do believe that there's a next level for Zerpa where he could become, I mean, honestly, with his fearlessness going into righties, to me, there's no reason why he can't, be right there with Estevez, with Urseg, as just absolute domination coming out of that bullpen. So to me, those are the top four. Yeah, Chris Stratton's on the team. He looks much better this year than he, this spring than he did last spring. Hopefully this year he looks a lot better than he did last year. Although I would imagine that's going to be a short leash if he struggles. John Schreiber, who's just got done on the hill out here at the B game, you know, he's a lock for that bullpen. And I think the final spot will really, you know, come down to a Daniel Lynch. Alec Marsh got on the mound again yesterday. He'll probably throw one more bullpen before getting back into a Cactus League game. So even though it seems, and JJ told you guys this, that you're going to be cautious with him, he'll likely start the season on the 10-day, 15-day IL. Yeah, Marsh, I mean, he's not going to go along with that. You know, he wants to be there. But Evan Sisk had a rough go in his first Cactus League action, but they're kind of throwing that one to the side because he was out with the flu for so long. But, yeah, of the, eight spots in the bullpen, to me, seven of them already locked up. I think I hit on those seven, and then there's, you know, really the Daniel Lynch, Alec Marsh spot to kind of round the whole thing out.
All right, Vern, we'll let you go. Appreciate it, man. And I don't know, do you go to a same, like, do you have a spot you go to just consistently and surprise? Like, you go to this, is there a restaurant? Is there a bar? Like, because we were talking about grocery shopping earlier in the show. Are you cooking out there? Are you just going to different place after different place?
Yeah, no, I'll make little, I buy like lunch meat and whatnot and wolf down a few sandwiches if I'm back at home, have a bowl of cereal. But no, normally it's a big hearty breakfast at this little diner that I like out here. It allows me to skip lunch.
Perfect.
And then, and then dinner is normally something that I probably shouldn't be eating.
There you go. Fair enough. All right, Vern. That's our
liquid
Royals
diet for dinner.
Our Royals insider, Josh Vern, you're joining us here on Cody and Gold. He's got his Hot Stove Show coming up Thursday at 6. And of course, we'll check in with him same time tomorrow right here on 96.5 The Fan. And our spring training coverage is brought to you by Park and Go, KC's premier airport parking destination. Up next, we get back to college basketball, what Missouri wasn't able to do over the weekend. What kind of trickle-down effect does it have? And does it change our expectations later on this month?